Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The NFL news coming in fast and furious as we welcome you into this Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line alongside three-time Super Bowl winning executive Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Got a great 2 hours on tap. Thanks for hanging out with us today. And I feel like I have to ask you this every time you're on the show now, Michael. Where in the world is Michael Lombardi today? What's going on, my friend?
Michael Lombardi's been doing way too much traveling, Stormy. I am at one of the greatest places of all time, NFL Films, where there's just so much magic on these walls. I could take pictures of all the players that are on the wall all day long, just walking through the corridors and looking at it. You know, they have the great Bill Walsh picture of him drawing a play with Joe Montana. I might spend 10 minutes over there just looking at that picture, but it's so great to be here. I feel Steve Sable. When I used to work here before Steve was alive and I got to know him really well. I loved him. Unfortunately, he's not with us, but you know, it's great to be here. It's good to be back with you. I traveled all day yesterday. I mean, I got to tell you, Stormy, Seattle, it might not be in the Far East, but it takes a while to get there.
Oh, I believe it 100%, Michael. But no, I'm glad that you're enjoying your time at NFL Films. And I'm so sad. I've been to Seattle a couple of times for work, but like neither time have I ever been able to go do or see anything. So I have it like set in my heart. The next time I'm doing a game at Washington or whatever it is, I'm taking an extra day. I'm going to look around because it's so beautiful out there. I know that, yeah. I have to. So I'm glad you got to.
Well, I can tell you this. I saw nothing. I was with Coach Belichick, who's acting as if he's preparing for the opening game.
Of course, he is.
I was with him at 5:30 every morning, thanks to Austin who picked us up. And I didn't get back to my hotel till 9 o'clock, and I was asleep by 9:05. So I was back in the NFL. I saw nothing. Nothing, Stormy. I'm with you.
Okay, so we're in this together. That does make me feel a little bit better. I want to talk some NFL news, Michael, because we missed you yesterday, but very fortunate to have Will Hill step in, who is a Vikings fan, as was Thor Nystrom, who we had as a college football analyst, draft analyst on the show yesterday. They were very disappointed and emotional, understandably so, learning the news that we did yesterday before we came on air, that Vikings rookie quarterback J.J. McCarthy has a torn right meniscus and is going to miss some time. The severity of the injury is still to be determined. Surgeons got to kind of get in there and see whether or not this is going to be an injury that holds him out for weeks or potentially months. Could be season ending if he needs a full repair and he can't be on that knee for a long time. What was your initial reaction when you heard the news yesterday?
Well, you're disappointed because the young man looks so good in the opening game. And you know Kevin O'Connell's going to do a wonderful job of coaching him. So that part, you're disappointed. The other part, the executive part for me was, okay, you know, we don't have to talk about the competition anymore. We don't have to talk who's going to be the starter on opening day. We now know. We can drive all our attention into Sam Darnold, who also looked very good. And we can build the team around Sam Darnold. We know that McCarthy's our future. This is no different than Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes. The only difference there is Patrick Mahomes wasn't injured. They just redshirted him. And I think that was the intent all along here in Minnesota. Whereas McCarthy can get a lot of mental reps. He can get a lot of stand behind the quarterback reps. He can still grow, but I think this allows him to not hit that rookie wall because it's coming for everybody. I mean, CJ Stroud didn't start off like a band of fire. He finished that way, but that rookie wall is real.
That's good thought process there. And you said it. He looked wonderful in that preseason debut, was getting rave reviews afterwards, 11-17, 188 yards, 2 touchdowns, the 1 interception early that he recovered from so nicely, had some brilliant throws. So I think for him and for people that are so excited and optimistic about what could be to come in the future about J.J. McCarthy, a little bit of a gut punch. But to your point, Sam Darnold's been the presumed starter. We know that was the expectation going in. You still have Nick Mullins and Jaren Hall, who, yes, nothing to write home about, but they got experience last year within this offense, given the injury to Kirk Cousins. We saw 4 quarterbacks that started for the Vikings a year ago. I don't think from a betting standpoint, this really changes anything about the Vikings. Their season win total sitting there at 6.5. I did have a fantasy question for you, though, because after you put like a period on the injury conversation, naturally you think about the star wide receiver that we have for the Minnesota Vikings and Justin Jefferson. And could this be an impact one way or another from Justin Jefferson's impact there? People are getting ready for their drafts, Michael. It's that time of year.
Oh, I'm fully aware of that. I've actually been getting booked on Cameo to pick draft orders. There I can't go. Even believe it. They're trusting me to pick. I feel like David Stern over here picking draft orders, you know? Of course, we'll end up with Sean Bradley, you know, but other than that, I'm not bitter about that. But believe me, I'm not. Anyway, look, I think to me, he's not going to be affected at all, because I think Kevin O'Connell's so good at getting the ball to the receivers. Look, Jefferson got the ball last year with Nick Mullins, Jared Hall, Joshua Dobbs. I mean, he got the ball last year. Why is he not going to get it this year?
No doubt about it. It wouldn't be a Lombardi line, Michael, if we didn't talk a little New York Jets. The Hassan Reddick saga also continues today. So he's been in the Jets building a combined total of one day, has not stepped foot on a practice field. Yet he has requested a trade. General manager Joe Douglas responded, "We have informed Hassan we will not trade him, that he is expected to be here with his teammates, and that he will continue to be fined per the CBA if he does not report." It was actually pretty funny. Aaron Rodgers yesterday was being asked questions at the podium about an off-field distraction that for once does not involve him. Robert Saleh was also asked questions about it. Here's what he had to say.
How do you avoid this being a distraction?
It's not. I promise you it's not. You know, it's a great opportunity for the guys who are here. You know, we love our D-line. We love our depth, especially at the DM position. And guys like Will McDonald, even Jermaine Johnson. Tack McKinley's getting a lot of run. So is Watts and McGregor and Clemens and Jalen. So we've got a lot of really good depth at the defensive end position, and they're all taking advantage of the extra opportunities that they're getting because of it.
Michael, am I hearing this right? So not only is it not a distraction, but it's a good thing. We're getting everybody else reps. It's great.
I mean, look. It's a good thing. You know, did he watch the Eagle defensive line? So let's put things in perspective last year. The Eagle defensive front in 2022 was first in the National Football League in 11% of the defensive plays they got sacks. Last year, they dropped down to 24. They had 6.23%. Hassan Reddick was on that team. He did not play well last year. It's one of the reasons why Howie Roseman, the general manager of the Eagles, decided, hey, I got to get more help. Bryce Huff. Now, I'm told by people inside the Jets building, the Jets didn't want to pay Bryce Huff because he's a situational player. He only played 31 plays. Well, those are pretty impactful 31 mm-hmm. plays, and he's not getting those good plays out of Hassan Reddick. And now he doesn't even have Reddick, and he gave away a third-round pick in 2026. So, look, you know, anything that Saleh says at a press conference, I'm not buying.
Well, and I don't blame you a bit. It's been a mess. And this is a franchise it's so interesting that this is a team and an organization that hasn't won more than 7 games since 2016. But the expectations are so high because of what they have brought in with Aaron Rodgers and a lot of the talent around him. But it's like you can never get away from these off-field distractions. And he can say that it's not one all he wants, but it's what we're talking about each and every day. You're in that New York market. It's constantly going to be a conversation topic. And you knew as an organization what you were getting yourself into, trading for a player who wanted a contract. You've known this all along.
Yeah, I mean, and here's the thing. It's a conversation about stupidity, right? You knew the guy wanted a new contract. He made no bones about it. And you did nothing about it. You just said, come here. Mm-hmm. Like, you ignored it. Like, Howie knew it was a problem and you didn't. Like, you can't make that trade, Stormy, until you have an agreement. Why mm-hmm. didn't Brandon Ayuk sign with the New England Patriots? Because they couldn't get an agreement from the Patriots or from the 49ers. Why didn't he sign with Cleveland? Because there was no agreement, right? There has to be. There's a formality. There's a method. There's a process. The Jets skirted the process, and now they're shocked he's not there. And now they're trying to say it's all going to be okay. Yeah. All right, it's all going to be okay. I'm not worried. Everything's going to be fine. I got it.
And he's just continuing to pile up fines each and every day. It's going to be ugly. Season win total for the Jets up from 9.5 to 10.5.
Stormy, when you pay those fines, you don't get, you know, like, okay, you get your paycheck and he's in New York and he was in Philly. You get your paycheck and, you know, you're in a pretty high tax bracket in terms of getting taxed. Mm-hmm. Like, that's $3 million of cash. That's not, you need $6 million in the bank to spend the $3 million. I don't think people understand this at all, right? This isn't let me just send you a check based on my check. No, you get taxes taken out. Now you've got to go into your financial savings and write a check for the amount, not for the discounted amount of the present mm-hmm. value. That's a hell of a... To have $3 million, to write a $3 million check, you know, you got to have $6 to $8 million in the bank.
Yeah, and he's complaining that he's only making 14 and a half right now. So that's impactful to lose that type of money. It's $50,000 a day in fines, over 700, almost 800,000 when you miss those game checks, which he's already got one of those that he's missed in the preseason. You mentioned Brandon Ayuk. We got kind of like a no update on the Ayuk situation when it comes to a deal that is reportedly in place with the Pittsburgh Steelers, but the 49ers have an offer out to him as well that they're trying to work something out with here. NFL Network's Mike Garofolo said there's one final hurdle in contract negotiations San Francisco is hoping to clear. What would you think that would be?
I would think it's probably whether they could franchise them again on a short-term deal. That would be one. That's always a bugaboo for players. And then the second would be the distribution of the money. What's the guarantee like in the third year? Is it skill guaranteed or is it skill and injury? Is it buttoned up? I think that would be the biggest conversation.
It feels to me like Ayuk has just lost leverage every step of the way here because
you lose leverage when you say you want the money, but then you lose leverage when you say I won't go somewhere. I mean, when you're all about money, you got to go to New England. They were going to pay you.
Exactly.
You got to go to New England.
Exactly. They're going to give you $32 million. You're not going to get that in San Francisco. So this is telling us.
Nor in Cleveland. So you got to take the money.
Yep. Now this is telling us, okay, you want to be in San Francisco. So we'll see ultimately if they're able to push that over the finish line or not. Still lots more to come. We're just getting started here on the Lombardi Line. We got Adam Burke joining us later on in the program, talking college football in hour two. Dave Shoemate, also college football analyst, former college football director of player personnel. Get the lowdown on all things CFB. But when we return, sticking in the NFL. Michael's got a lot to say about the Dallas Cowboys.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We are now officially just 10 days away from kickoff of the 2024-25 college football season. We had the AP preseason top 25 get revealed earlier this week, where the Georgia Bulldogs for the second year in a row are your preseason number one. They are also a plus 300 favorite to win the national championship coming up this year. To talk all things college football, we welcome in Dave Shoemate, college football analyst, former college football director of player personnel, now contributor for SEC Unfiltered, has an unbelievably comprehensive college football preview for this season, CFB Focus 2024. Dave, thank you so much for joining us. What'd you think of the top 25 when it came out this week?
Stormy, Mike, appreciate y'all having me. Usually I don't really get caught up into it, but it's a good talking point initially, as like you mentioned, we're 2 weeks away from week and a half from week zero, 2.5 from week one. I think they got the top five right for the most part. I mean, I think it's interchangeable. I mean, you could probably make a case Ole Miss should be ranked ahead of Alabama going in. I think Texas's injury with C.J. Baxter at the running back spot hurts him a little bit more because I think he was in that kind of elite, on that verge of being on that category. There's a lot of good running backs. You win with a lot of good running backs. I think he was on the verge of taking that elite step. Overrated, somebody I really didn't like, probably right, Michigan, Ohio, Florida State, probably kind of the two darlings of last year. Probably they lost a lot. Obviously, Michigan now is Sharon Moore. You got a new coach there. Florida State lost just a lot of major contributors. They brought in some transfer portal additions, but those guys were kind of like the Roydell Williams, the Malik Benson, the running back and receiver they brought in for Alabama. Were kind of just guys. So I don't know how that translates into actually being, hey, like, we need you to be the superstars, kind of like the Keon Coleman's of last year were. So I think those are two teams that kind of stand out that were probably a little overrated. I think they got the top four, top five, right? I mentioned, I think last time I was on there, I'm higher on Tennessee now. As we got closer to the year. So I think they should be moved up a little bit, probably a little bit lesser on LSU. But those are probably just a brief synopsis initially when you're looking at it.
Dave, who's the Washington of this year? I mean, I know that it would have to be somebody with a veteran quarterback, an older team. Like, who fits the Washington profile?
I mean, if you factor in schedule, probably a little bit. I'm not a full believer in this. You bring up a good point, Mike, with a veteran quarterback. Probably Missouri. They got so much production back on offense with Brady Cook. Now, they just lost Darius Smith today. Their edge guy was supposed to be replaced Darius Robinson from last year, the Georgia transfer. But if they can get things fixed on all three levels of on defense, they got a new defensive coordinator come over from South Alabama. He didn't call it, but I think they have a chance to be decent on defense. But I think with their veteran quarterback, the schedule for me with Missouri is so beneficial. I mean, they're going to cakewalk into the game October 5th at A&M. I mean, they're going to be 4-0 rolling into that unless our guy Bill O'Brien surprises them week three there. So, yeah, September 14th against Boston College. I think if they beat A&M, unless something crazy happens and we have a bunch of 10-2 teams in the SEC, then I think the schedule could start working against them at that point. But I think Missouri sets up pretty well to kind of make that Washington run just because they have so much back. They probably have the best skill guy in the SEC in Luther Burden. I think they would be that Washington in 2024, Mike.
You're getting our producer, Elliot Bowman, very excited, by the way. He is Mizzou made. But I so agree with you with the schedule. This is a team I'm actually very high on, just considering they play in the SEC, but this is the road they get where they avoid Georgia, they avoid Tennessee, they avoid Ole Miss. A lot of it just sets up for them to have an opportunity to contend, oddly enough, for an SEC title, despite all the talent that they have across this league. I know you said when it comes to the AP poll, you felt like those top teams, they got it right. Typically, the national champion does come out of those top seven preseason college football ranked teams. But I'm curious if there's one of those that you think might just miss the playoff altogether. There's nine teams that are odds on numbers to make the college football playoff. You got Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon, Texas, Notre Dame, Penn State, Ole Miss. And I guess we could throw Alabama in there as two. They're not odds on, but they're close. Any of those teams that you think could miss the college football playoff altogether?
In that top 10 range, you were saying?
Yeah, in the top, I would say top eight.
Top eight. I was going to probably pick one of those top eight teams, Stormy. I'd probably go with I'd probably go Notre Dame. Let's just say they lose to Texas A&M week one at Kyle Field. I think that would be – I mean, they still got Florida State on the schedule. I think they got a matchup with Louisville at home, just going off the top of my head. They get USC last game of the regular season. They already lost their left tackle for the year in fall camp. I know A&M's kind of salivating in the mouth, talking to some of those guys over there, thinking they got a real shot with Mike Elko having familiar over there. So I think that's a big game for Notre Dame. If Notre Dame wins that game at Kyle Field, I know everybody's fired up about that one. College game day is going to be there. If they, I think it's a big swing game both ways. If Notre Dame wins that, they got a good shot to get to the college football playoffs because I don't see three of their losses really down the stretch at that point. If they go win that game, they're as good as I think they can be. If they lose, I don't know. That would be an interesting from that standpoint. But I do think if Notre Dame is 10-2, I think we all know the brand. I think they're going to try to get Notre Dame into that playoff. But just in the top seven, top eight, I'd probably say Notre Dame would be a team. I think it misses the playoffs completely from that standpoint.
Dabo Sweeney's taking a different approach to this NIL stuff. What's your feeling on his team this year, and can he crack the top 12?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like what Cade Klubnik does. I think he gets a bad rap at time going back last year. Now, I feel like that's a conversation. I don't think this is going to happen, Mike, but I think that's kind of a conversation people in college football aren't having and aren't ready to accept. Like, what if Clemson were to beat Georgia week one? Like, what does that mean? Week two, what if Michigan were to beat Texas? Like, those are some of those games, those non-con games we've automatically chalked up, myself included. I'm guilty of it. But it's just conversations from that standpoint. But overall, from Clemson, I mean, I think this year, Garrett Riley, they're going to take some of the reins off. Lincoln Riley's little brother, the offensive coordinator, he's in his second year at Clemson. I think he's got a little bit – I think from hearing from some people over there, they're kind of taking the reins back. It's going to be truly kind of his offense, I think, this year. Defensively, he promoted up the analyst within. I think they have some guys, especially on the defensive front. I think they recruited well there. They grabbed a couple kids out of the state of Alabama that were pretty good defensive linemen that will now be juniors, will be third years in that program. I think defensively they're going to be there to have a chance. And I think the ACC is just pretty wide open, similar to the Big 12. So I think Clemson, it wouldn't shock me if Clemson in that play. I actually had Miami winning the ACC. Am I an overbeliever in Mario Cristobal as a game day coach? I think on paper, as Mike, you're a personnel guy. I'm a personnel guy. I'm going to look at the roster. I'm going to go with Miami. But I think Clemson's sitting there at that number two spot. That's who I think is going to be in the ACC championship game. If I'm not high on any one of the ACC, I think Florida State takes a step back this year. But Clemson, it would not shock me at all if they're in the college football playoff from the ACC.
I feel like you set that up so well about Miami, though. They have all the tools, but can their coach do what he needs to do on game day to get them there? Miami, by the way, 4-1 odds in the ACC. Florida State, a plus 290 favorite. Clemson sitting there at plus 350. And just to put some odds also to that Notre Dame statement that Dave said, if there were a team potentially to be held out, plus 150 to miss the college football playoff. Dave Shoemate, college football analyst, former college football director, player personnel, joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. As you look at some of the games coming up, though, week zero, week one, like I said off the top, we're just 10 days away from getting this thing kicked off here. Are there any games in particular that stand out to you on those early weekend slates? Any teams that could be on upset watch in your perspective either?
Yeah, I mean, week zero, I looked at the line last week. I kind of like the week zero game in Ireland, Georgia Tech getting the plus 13 and a half. I might even like them money line. Again, I keep kind of bringing Florida State. Not a negative. I don't think they're going to be like some 6-6, 5-7. I think they're going to be that 8-4, 9-3 range. I still think they're going to be better than the most rosters in the ACC. But still, I don't think they replace that production. So I think that's one to keep it. All right, plus 11 now is what, plus 11 and a half Georgia Tech's getting. I'd load up on Georgia Tech. And they got Haynes King coming back, second year in the program. Buster Faulkner's the OC. Brent Key and them do a good job. So that week zero matchup, that's what I'm fired up for. Week one, obviously, we talked about Notre Dame, Texas A&M. I just think that's a swing game for both teams. Both teams will feel really good leaving that. As we get closer, I like A&M. I think Mike Elko's never fielded a bad defense, even going back to his Bowling Green days. Riley Leonard, the quarterback at Notre Dame, that was Mike Elko's quarterback at Duke last year. So there's a lot of familiarity. I'm excited about that one. Florida, Miami kind of has a WWE loser leave town kind of feel to it. Little Mario Cristobal, mm-hmm. Billy Napier, excited about that one. Under the radar one, this is a team I kind of like that would surprise in the Big 12, is West Virginia, Penn State that we get week one. I think West Virginia's got a lot of guys back. The Big 12's pretty wide open. I like Utah. They're the most consistent team heading into that program or into that new conference, but it is a new conference. Can Cam Rising even stay healthy for a whole year? I think Garrett Green, the quarterback for West Virginia, under the radar player, they got 75% of their roster production coming back. They improved defensively. They finished in the top half of the Big 12. Schedule's difficult, but they're a team that wouldn't surprise me that is playing in Arlington for the Big 12 title at the end of the year and kind of rounding out that top 10, especially if they were to get a week one win against a team like Penn State, who people are expecting to contend for the Big 10, compete for a playoff spot there. So those would probably be my three week one. Obviously, Georgia Tech, Florida State.
Real quick, Dave, we got about 30 seconds to go here on the show. But, I mean, how good is Drew Aller?
So I'm not a believer in him either. The only thing I'm holding hope – you're right. Like, he gets a lot of almost like publicity of people. It's almost like he's had a good year and he just hasn't the last few years. But I don't even remember the production from the year before. It's almost like people are giving him the benefit of the doubt. I will say – there's someone who – I mean, it feels like James Franklin rolls through a new OC every 2 years. They brought in Kansas's OC, who has been with Lance Leopold, Kansas's coach, when they went back to Buffalo. They've always produced good offenses. So it's Andy Kotelnicki is there now. If he can't get them to be a little – if he can't get them to be a little more explosive, I don't know. I don't know what else to do. So I'm leaning – I'm still thinking Penn State's in that 9-3, something like that. But no, I think Andy Kotelnicki was kind of an X factor of a coordinator spot for the entire season.
Yeah, that juice to the under on their season win total certainly makes sense. Dave, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate you.
Thank you, Dave. Great job, man.
Dave Shoemate, everybody. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There are a lot of, let's call it chaotic, situations in the National Football League this year. Some coaches who I don't like saying are on the hot seat. So maybe the way we can term this, Michael, is coaches that have a lot of pressure to win now. And that's where we're going to shift gears here for today's edition of Lombardi's List, where we typically do a top five. Today's the top five coaches with pressure to win now. We've talked a lot about the Dallas Cowboys and the lame duck status of Mike McCarthy, Michael. So that feels like a very good place to start. Let's talk through McCarthy.
Well, McCarthy's won 36 games in 3 years, but you never know it. I mean, a guy wins 36 games, he'd be getting contract extensions left and right. That's 12 wins a year. But McCarthy lost the worst game he could lose at home against a Green Bay team for what all we think wasn't very good. A Green Bay team that barely beat Carolina. A Green Bay team that lost to Tommy DeVito on the road. A Green Bay team that lost to Tampa Bay at home. So, you know, the team came out in that game. And in fairness to Jerry, the team looked ill-prepared. They looked like they were lethargic. The quarterback played a disastrous game, right? They made more mistakes and didn't know what to do with. And so all those 36 wins got washed away. You know, there was nothing here. So you can't go in there and say to Mike, you did a great job 3 years. I'm going to reward you. Players would look at you funny. Basically, if you did that, you would be saying to the players, it's your fault. He's a great coach. So Jerry took the opposite approach, not do anything, play for it. Now, here's what happens when you do that. And this is real important for us as a betting market, because if it doesn't go well to start in Cleveland, doesn't go well, come home against New Orleans, right? And wins don't have to be the indicator. Struggling, when it looks bad, it becomes a problem. Because what happens? A lot of teams need confidence. They need confidence. And usually the best teams get confidence in the second half of the season, right? What happened down the stretch of the Green Bay? They got their confidence. They got momentum, even though some people don't believe in momentum. They got that. That's important. But when you're in one of these situations like McCarthy's in, and you don't get some momentum early, it's hard.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting conversation topic probably for all these coaches that we're going to talk about on this list, Michael, is the importance of having success early. And, I mean, week one, week two, pressure that could be on some of these coaches.
Yeah, let's take Brian Daboll, for example. 6 games before the bye week, right? I mean, he's got his feet up on the desk. There's no one that watched Hard Knocks came away thinking that Daboll was humble. No one thought that Daboll was in command. Forget about Joe Shane for a moment. So he's got pressure on him. You know, now the owners put all the pressure on him because he wants the quarterback to play better. Whether that happens or not, I don't know. But he took away the play calling from Kafka. He took away from Mike Kafka. So now all of a sudden, you know, he's calling the plays himself. Right, hired a new defense coordinator, signed Brian Burns. I mean, there's expectations there. John Mara came out and said, you know, they know what I expect. And people tell me internally within the organization that the general manager is kind of being a little bit more aloof to the coaches because he wants to evaluate them. So, look, they've got to get off to a fast start. That's why they were so good in 2021. They started fast, beat Tennessee. You know, they had these come from behind win against Jacksonville. Now, it all fell apart in the second half of the season, and that carried over into next year because why? They're not very talented. I mean, you don't win 7 games in 38 attempts against the Eagles and the Giants and think you have a talented roster.
Yeah. Great first season for Dable. Like you said, went from a 4-win team, turned it around to 9. Last year, a big step back. You pay Daniel Jones and – not only does he get hurt, but he's just not very good to begin with. The offensive line struggles. The list goes on and on. But I think just food for thought, as we talk about these coaches, people at home listening or in the car listening, if you think that these coaches can turn things around and are going to win these games early in the season and get their reputation back within the organization, then maybe it's a team that you're targeting for Survivor or looking on the opposite side of that. And that's a good reminder too, just in general, if you haven't signed up for a Circa Survivor contest or Circa Millions, you don't have to live in Las Vegas to be a part of these contests. You just got to come down for a day to sign up. And if you're able to sign up with a proxy service, you can do the entire rest of the season through them. And Winner Circle Proxy is the preferred proxy of VSIN. They do an unbelievable job. They're in their 9th year of providing trusted proxy services to the top contest players, including the winners in both Survivor and the Million contest last year. They have a lot of exclusive events, room discounts that are included as well for the Ultimate Contest Weekend coming up at the end of this month, August 22nd to 24th. WinnerCircleProxy.com. Head there now, book your appointment. Again, really, really great opportunity there to be able to play from anywhere in the country. But to get back to some of these coaches, okay, we mentioned Mike McCarthy, Brian Daboll. Let's go to Nick Sirianni now, because the Eagles got off to an unbelievable start last year on paper, 10-1, before things just completely imploded. Then we have the story that comes out last week from Jeremy Fowler and Tim McManus, kind of detailing the internal dysfunction, a quote, fractured and unhealthy relationship between Sirianni and Jalen Hurts, who they signed to a contract last year. Why is Sirianni under so much pressure right now? They won a lot of games. They played in a Super Bowl the year prior. What's going on here?
Well, I think a lot of it is emotion. I mean, I think he's very emotional on game day. I think he doesn't kind of process things through. He doesn't coach the offense. He doesn't coach the defense. He didn't recognize the problem with the team last year when they got out of shape. I mean, their two defensive tackles, Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter, probably gained 100 pounds between the two of them. So the team was out of shape. That's why they were 1-6. The only game they won was against the Giants by 6 points. They couldn't beat anybody down the stretch. They lost to Arizona. Arizona ran the ball on them. If you're not calling plays, if you're not the play caller offensively or defensively, then you're in charge of the conditioning. And that was bad. Now they fired their whole strength and performance coach. They've done everything to make Sirianni successful. We'll see. And when an organization does everything to make a coach successful, it really falls on his plate.
Yeah. New strength and conditioning staff, new set of coordinators with Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio in there. And you mentioned all of those losses that they had down the stretch. How about that ugly wild card round loss, 32-9 to a Baker Mayfield led Bucks team? It wasn't pretty down the stretch. So we'll see if they can get this train back on the tracks. Everybody's favorite head coach, Robert Saleh. Yes, certainly. Pressure for him in year two of Aaron Rodgers. We mentioned this stat earlier. This organization has not had more than 7 wins since 2016. Their win total this year, 10.5. They're expected to make the playoffs and do a whole lot this year. How much pressure is on Saleh?
Yeah, I think there's all the pressure because I think you keep asking this question all the time. And it's really a valid question, and it's a great question. What does success look like for Saleh?
Yeah.
What does that look like? Is it 10 wins at a wild card? Is it 11 wins a division in a conference championship game? You know, what does it look like? Is it a wild card win on the road in Baltimore? You know, you got a 41-year-old quarterback. Is that being successful? I don't know. I think to me, to really judge Robert Saleh, someone has to decide what is successful. Now, I think there's no franchise who is more linked to the election than the Jets, because if Woody has to go back to Ireland to be the ambassador because Trump wins, a lot of people in the Jets are going to breathe a sigh of relief. If Trump loses, a lot of people in the Jets are going to be in trouble.
That's an interesting perspective. It's been a mess for the Jets for a while. Longest active playoff drought in U.S. professional sports right now, 13 straight years. We'll see what they're able to do this season. Closing things out with a coach that I would say, Michael, I don't think it has been on a ton of people's radar from this standpoint. Doug Peterson with the Jacksonville Jaguars. He takes over after all of the madness that was the Urban Meyer situation. Felt like he finally got the most out of Trevor Lawrence. Last year, still a 9-8 season. But when you start the season 8-3 and only win one the rest of the way, that's when things become problematic. Yeah, they did deal with some injuries. Trevor Lawrence obviously had his injuries. But with Doug Peterson having a lot of pressure, why do you feel that way for him?
Well, because I think they teased everybody with a playoff win against the Rams and then having a great start. I think they want to see results. And this isn't from me. This is from their owner. Read his quote.
Yeah.
At the end of this minicamp, but he has great expectations for this team. He's tired of losing. They're the losingest franchise in the history, right? He's tired of losing. He's tired of signing free agents and then 2 years later cut them. So to me, he's just kind of like, you know, look, I do think there is a Belichickian effect out there, because what you're saying here is, you know, you're going to get to a point where maybe not happen this year, because we know the Super Bowl winning champion Falcons didn't see it this way. But you're going to ask yourself the question, are we better off with Bill or are we better off with someone else? That question is going to get asked a lot in a lot of buildings.
I love that you brought up the Shad Khan of it all, because he did put this staff on notice. He called the back end of last season, quote, organizational failure, said winning now is the expectation. As a staff, they do need to focus more on player development. I think he called it an addiction to free agents. And so signing guys like Trevor Lawrence, re-signing Trevor Lawrence, re-signing Josh Allen, those were big steps that they actually re-signed guys that they drafted highly, because that's something that hasn't really happened for the last decade. 9-8 back-to-back seasons. How many wins? What's the range for them this year, you think?
I think they got to win the North. I think if they don't win the North, and I mean, why shouldn't they win the North? I mean, they got to close the gap. They paid their quarterback. They've got a Super Bowl winning coach. They hired a new defensive staff. I think the results have got to show up.
They were, of course, an odds-on favorite to win the division last year. This year, that is a role that is given to the Texans at plus 105 as a favorite there. We'll be right back. Why Not Wednesday to close out hour two. Don't miss it.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Maybe a stupid one, but I'm just spitballing here.
Can it make you say why not?
That wasn't a stupid question.
It's time for Why Not Wednesday.
I mean, why not?
You know when they say it's so crazy it just might work?
The unfortunate breaking news that we had earlier today regarding Vikings rookie quarterback J.J. McCarthy is that his torn meniscus is going to hold him out for his entire rookie season, Michael, which naturally has people talking about Sam Darnold. And that, well, yes, he was already the presumed starter. If he could make things work in Minnesota, could he be comeback player of the year? The odds have shrunk to 12-1. Could you say why not?
Yeah, I could say why not to that. You get me on that one. I mean, why not? Right? It's one of those where I think he's got a really good quarterback coach. And Kevin O'Connell. They've got really good skill. I think handing the ball off to Aaron Jones is always going to be helpful if he stays healthy. with Jefferson and all the players they have, Addison, Hawkinson. Yeah, why not?
So would his adversity be that he had to go see like a Wiccan or a Median or something to stop seeing ghosts? Because you know how they changed the criteria for the award this year, right? So that in my mind, I already had Sam Darnold kind of axed off because they were trying to encourage voters no longer to bet on guys that either hadn't played or were just performing poorly after Joe Flacco won over DeMar Hamlin last year. They're trying to change the narrative about that. Does that change your philosophy at all with this?
Yeah, I mean, I think they changed it. No, because I think what Darnold would be, to me, Darnold represents comeback player of the year. Had never really had a good year, and now he needs to come back from something.
Okay, we shall see. This next one you're going to love. Could you say why not to Robert Saleh, coach of the year? If he gets through all of this adversity, could he be coach of the year? What do you think?
Oh, that's a good one. No chance. Look, everything that happens good for the Jets will be Aaron Rodgers.
Yes.
Everything that happens bad for the Jets will be Robert Saleh. So no way.
That's what I've been saying constantly. Because the fact that his odds have gotten shorter and shorter and that he's among the favorites to win this award, quite frankly, is mind-boggling to me because he's been the source of a lot of their issues and not being able to handle things and not having the leadership.
He can't handle a press conference.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So I think, yes, Aaron Rodgers should win coach of the year if the Jets have a 10-plus win season and make the playoffs. We talked a lot about the Dallas Cowboys today. You have a new article up at VSiN.com detailing the idea and concept of when for Jerry Jones and the Cowboys and all of the contracts. Could you say why not to an alt-under on the Cowboys season win total that this lame duck year is not going to motivate this group? They're not going to come close to their season wins. Plus 205 is the price, under 8.5.
Under 8.5. You know, I could go, what's the price? Just 205?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think that's enough, Stormy.
Okay.
I don't think that's enough of a payday. Do you?
So I guess it depends on how you view the Cowboys right now, because we've talked a lot about how much with Mike McCarthy and the situation that he's in right now, maybe guys aren't going to be motivated quite to the same level. Maybe they're not going to get on board with their head coach as much. But because of the success,
eight wins isn't exactly. Oh, I mean, that's not like we're reaching for the stars here.
Yeah, their win total is 10.5.
Nine wins there in Dallas is going to be is labeled a disaster, right? I mean, that's going to be labeled a disaster.
So how do you feel about their standard win total, 10.5?
I'm definitely playing the under.
Okay, so you think they fall in between that range. Okay, that's fair. That's fair. How about Ja'Marr Chase? He was not on the practice field yesterday for the first time as part of his hold-in. He's been around. He was not. If he does get on the field, though, high expectations for him as one of the top wide receivers in the league. Could you say why not him leading the National Football League in receiving yards this year at 9-1?
Yeah, I mean, his biggest obstacle is Tyreek Hill, but I would say why not to that. 9-1 is good number. I definitely think I would do that. I think he's got a chance. I'm not saying he's going to. He's got to stay healthy. Got to have a good offensive line. Mims is practicing really well at right tackle. I think that helps him. So, yeah, I think to me he has all the ingredients to be one of those players.
Well, and this has been
talented. I think this, too, for Chase is with Burton on the team. And Burton being an outside receiver, if they put Chase inside like they're talking about doing, it opens up a whole world of opportunity for Chase in terms of down the field, not getting doubled, making more explosive plays. It's a move they needed to make. But Tyler Boyd was in there. He averaged 6 yards per reception in the air. All he was doing was catching it and going down.
Yeah, I remember you making that point on Monday, and it's a very, very valid one when it comes to Ja'Marr Chase. And we've talked a lot about wide receiver. This is the offseason of the wide receiver, all the money they are making, the level of importance and value that's being thrust upon this position as well. That leads into this next Why Not Wednesday question, also about receiving yards. Maybe it is Ja'Marr Chase, if you think why not, that he could have the most receiving yards in the league this year. But could someone break the record for receiving yards in a single season? 1,964.5 is the number. Of course, the Hall of Famer Calvin Johnson did so in 2012 with the Lions. He holds the record. You said Tyreek Hill will be Ja'Marr Chase's biggest competition to have the most this year. But do you think Tyreek, him, or another wideout could reach this number?
Yeah, I do. I think Tyreek was going to get it last year if he doesn't get hurt. Now, those ifs are pretty big ifs, right? We know that. Same thing with Jeff. I mean, but, you know, with Tyreek Hill, his game is so dramatic and so good. I would not be as scared of that at all. I think he would have done it last year, Stormy.
Yeah, if he and Tua Tagovailoa can both stay healthy for a full season, certainly would make sense. He was on track before his injury last year. Cooper Kupp was close in 2021, that Triple Crown season. Then you've got other guys too, Justin Jefferson, CeeDee Lamb. Could one of these stars do it this year or elsewhere? Let's go to the running back position. Could you say why not? To Derrick Henry leading the league in rushing yards this year, 10-1 odds. What do you think?
Yeah. I would go for that. I mean, you got me a lot on one, not today. I can say that.
We're so optimistic, no Michael. Who are you?
I know. Who am I is right. I definitely see that. I could see them doing that because I think, you know, they're going to give them the ball. They're going to run. They're going to commit to it. And everybody keys on Lamar Jackson. But this big fella, it's hard to get on the ground.
Yeah. Well, Calvin Johnson's record has only stood for the last 12 years. Eric Dickerson's has stood for a long time, 1984 with the Rams. Could you say why not to any player breaking the rushing yard single season record going over 2,105 and a half?
No, I can't. The game's too hard. There's more games. It's too difficult. You know, there's too many substitutions. There's too much situational football. People change the lineups constantly. So for me, I would say no way. When Eric was running, it was the league was dominated by runners. This is not a league dominated by runners. It's dominated by pass catchers out of the backfield, but not runners.
Does it surprise you that this is only 7-1, given how long this record has stood for?
Yeah, I mean, that's another reason not to bet it. That seems like awfully, awfully low, right? You got to wait till January. You got to pray. I mean, there's so many conditions that you put into the deal. Like, how does this work? Like, you got to, the guy's got to stay healthy. You got to wait to the end of the year. The team's got to be good. They got to play from in front. Because here's the part, too, that no one seems to understand. If you don't play from in front, you're not going to gain yards. If you're behind in games, you know, you're not going to gain yards. You say, well, you know, Joe Mixon's going to have a good year in Houston because he's down there. They're good. Houston was the worst run team in the league last year.
Yeah. Okay, Michael, so we got one no. Can we get no's on back-to-back Why Not Wednesday questions? I think we will. Can you say why not? To Georgia, preseason number one. Missing the college football playoff. You get 4-1. Better plus money odds than anyone else to miss. Could you say why not?
No, I couldn't. I mean, look. If Georgia doesn't make it to the top 12 teams, I mean, you think that the election in Georgia is going to be tough? Oh my God! Don't go down to Georgia, right?
Yep.
Like seriously, this could be ugly down there. They're going to need armed guards all over the place. So no chance.
Kirby Smart's trying to be the next Nick Saban. Okay, he's not missing the college football playoff in its expanded format. Speaking of the next Nick Saban, Kalen DeBoer. Could you say why not? For him to win the Bear Bryant Award, top head coach in college football, 9-1 odds.
Well, I think he does a great job. Based on what I think of Jalen Milroe, based on what I think of the team in Alabama, I could say why not to that because I think DeBoer's a good coach. I think DeBoer's really good at keeping players in his program. He took every good player with him from Washington. He made no bones about it. So I could say that for sure.
He's done it every step of the way in his coaching career. Obviously, stepping in some shoes of the best guy to ever do it are going to be tough, but 9-1, year one? I don't see why not. Let me hit you with one more because I already know my answer is heck no. The College Football Playoff Selection Committee ain't doing this again, but could you say why not to the Liberty Flames making the expanded college football?
No, they destroyed it for everybody. Right? They destroyed it for everybody.
That's what I keep saying. Go ahead.
Once in, you know, and what was proven right was keeping Florida State out.
We've had a couple guests that have come on the program that are saying, oh, but Liberty's got the easiest schedule in the country. Again, they're for sure going to go 10-0. How can you hold out an undefeated team? Well, news, flash, we can. And if the selection committee has any sense, they will. Great stuff. 4-1 odds, though, if you disagree with Michael and I and you think that that is a good bet, go for it. Michael and I will stick with our thought that that is a St. Jude's play. Just donate it. Just donate it. Don't even bother with that wager. Michael, awesome show as always, my friend. Thanks so much for this. This was fun. Glad to have you back.
Thank you, Stormy. See you tomorrow.
Yep. Sharp Money coming up next here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Thanks for hanging out with us. We'll be back tomorrow. Same time, same place.